This is a production of Cornell University.
With endowed vendors, because we have to go to open enrollment, and there's a set government-determined window of period when we can offer you changes. And so we have been working probably since April on some of these contracting ideas. When we talk about endowed health insurance, we are self-insured, which means we see every claim dollar that comes in. We see every administrative expense that comes in, and we put them together to look at what our cost is for delivering things. As you know, we have three health plans on the endowed side. We have the Cornell Program for Healthy Living, the CPHL. It's our largest plan, about 6,000 faculty and staff in that plan. We have our WOW Cornell Medical Plan, which has the extra network down in New York City. It costs us a bit more to give access to these doctors who have slightly higher fee schedules. So that's a plan that's a little bit more costly to participate in, but very valuable for some of our staff. We have about 40 people in that plan right now. It's a relatively new plan. And then finally, we have what we call the health savings account plan, or the high deductible health plan. It's a variation on the Aetna traditional plan. Has a higher deductible. Sometimes it's more popular for people who know they're not going to have a lot of medical expense, so they'd rather not pay a premium every pay period. They'd rather pay more when they use the service. And so that's the idea behind the high deductible health plan, HSI. When we went to Aetna and we talked to them this year about what had happened over the last 2 years, and we look at claims over a two-year period, so we take account for any blips that we might have in any 1 year, what we saw is that while the nation was seeing a growth of about 5 to 8%, Cornell in the last 2 years actually saw a blended better increase than that. Now, part of that was when we stood in front of you last year, we've had a lot of high-cost claims in 2016. And high-cost claims are individuals that spend more than $250,000 per service. And because we have not such a large population, you know, 6,000 in one plan, if we have a couple people spending more than $250,000 on a claim, we start to see a huge impact in our overall expense. We, like other institutions, find that about 10% of our population drive 85% of our cost. So if we just think about, you know, the majority of us around this room are well. We don't necessarily need a lot of services. When we do need services, they tend to be higher cost. And so even in this area where costs are relatively low, even a few fluctuations are big. The very good news is that in 2017, we saw fewer of those higher cost claims than in 2016. So when we blend the 2 years together, we were actually able to say that we only have a 3.9% cost increase for 2019. Now, other things that go into that, some of you are familiar, we have Optum Rx with a prescription, separate prescription card system. We're part of a coalition now. 20 years ago, I helped to found this coalition with the then Cornell director, Paul Bursick. I was at Columbia. Columbia Cornell created this coalition, and now it's up to 40 universities working together to get better savings, to get better buying, to control the pharma industry a little bit more. Between those lower costs that we saw this year, and we lowered some administrative fees, about almost $1 million over 3 years, we're able to really keep contributions both for Cornell and for faculty and staff low for 2019. Doesn't mean there can't be an increase. We've got to pass on an increase. There's still risk out there. And so what we're seeing is that in total, we have to collect about $700,000 more from staff in the next year, and staff pay roughly 10% of the cost of this coverage. Cornell pays 9%. Cornell's going to see about $2.7 million in increase in cost. When we talk about a 3.9% increase, no one, eyes glass over in most of these presentations, like, what does that mean to me? So we try to put it into dollars. So again, about 6,000 people in the CPHL plan. We have four levels of coverage: individual, individual plus child, individual plus spouse, and family. The range of increases per month are $2 to $16 at the high end. And these are pre-tax increases. So again, whatever your tax rate is, you're not going to feel that full net impact. You'll see probably a third or so less than that. So not wonderful news, not terrible news. It's going to get better, though. if you let me go to the next slide, it's going to be a little bit better. But questions on medical first.
So I want to kind of take a step back, just ask in more layman's term, when you say the university would incur some costs based on special cases, like let's say I have a cold, I pay my premium. I have a cold, I go to the doctor, I pay $20, you know, copay, let's say. Then the doctor is charging the insurance company whatever they want. Is Cornell paying extra for that? Like, how does that?
I pay all of those dollars that you're not paying.
Right.
So let's say your doctor charges. Yep. Let's say your doctor charges $300 for that visit. Not unrealistic.
Right.
You're paying $20 for it. If it's all allowable, if that's an allowable expense, I'm paying the $280. Cornell's paying $280.
Right.
So if you add those up, if we think about your share at staff and our share at Cornell, you're paying the copay, and your monthly premiums or your paycheck premiums are going towards that expense, but it's socialized. So
right.
We're not saying you pay more because you used it. We're saying everybody has to pay a certain amount to get to where we are. If we have an amazing year, then the next year we're not going to pass on as high costs because even though we think medical trend is going to go up, we're not going to have to collect more from you.
Right.
And that's what kind of happened in 16, 17. We had claims go up higher than we were collecting. And so when we went into 17, we had a slightly higher increase we had to pass on because we're making up for the year before, and we have to kind of assume some level of that high use will continue.
Right.
We look at the kinds of services that are happening, too. Is this a recurring cost? Is it a one-time?
So basically, it's not like you get a cut with the insurance company. I'm just going to pay you the sum amount. You guys are going to cover our staff. You're going to pay, turn around, and pay for every penny. So the more I use the service, I go to the doctor, I get sick, or I get like some special case, it's going to come back and it's going to come out from this collective pot of money.
Yep.
So I just want to clarify that, you know, kind
and
of.
You're explaining very clearly the difference between insured relationships and self-insured relationships.
Got you. Okay. So that's
so
self-insured.
Yes. We're self-insured. In the past, if we had an insured relationship with Aetna, we would negotiate with them and they would say, okay, you have to pay us X every month, regardless of what your usage is. And at the end of the year, we'll kind of look at it and maybe we'll give you a break. But they're selling us a product at a cost.
So
we believe that we have more control this way because we're not giving out money. Part of it's a cash control, to be honest. We can actually pay what we need to. But we're taking on that risk because if I do have a lot of high-cost claims, we're now paying much more than we would have if Aetna had the risk.
And this is only on the endowed side.
This
right.
is only on the endowed side.
So
yeah.
The contract is going to be the other model?
Exactly.
What did you call it?
Insured.
Insured, not
yeah.
self-insured.
Exactly. So what basically happens, and we're going to go there in a minute, but from the medical plans that are offered on the contract college side, those are New York State plans. They do all the negotiating. They come up with a premium. That's their arrangement with the insurance company, and that's what we pay, regardless of use.
Gotcha.
It does mean if it's a bad year, we can expect the next year we're going to see those premiums shoot up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with New York State, we're spread over a much bigger base, so you know I'm not talking about 6,000 lives that I have to worry about. We're talking about tens of thousands, but it's the same concept. Mm-hmm. Other questions on medical? Okay. Yes?
Cornell's only paying the reasonable charge, not what the doctor's charging. Like, they'll cut it back to, they could charge $300, but the insurance says it's only worth $60, so Cornell's only charging.
So now we get into another concept, and I'll explain it, but we won't have a lot of time.
Okay.
So there's the idea of network participation and out-of-network,
mm-hmm.
not being in the network. So in a network arrangement, Aetna's gone out to doctors and said, would you agree to be part of our network, and we'll not push business, but we will guarantee you a certain level of business because we're Aetna and you'll get our customers. That doctor's agreed upon a set schedule of what they can charge. If that doctor doesn't participate with Aetna, and so I just came from New York City 2 years ago, I was on Fifth Avenue working with a company and none of the Fifth Avenue doctors participated in any insurance company, which meant they could charge whatever they wanted. And the insurance company has to say, well, let's look at what's reasonable, what's customary. So they look at a block of doctors and say, what would most of them charge at this expense? We're going to cut off the high ones and the low ones, and we're going to have a range. So now when you talk about out-of-network, it works a similar way. If you go out-of-network in Aetna, they're going to look at what's the normal cost for that procedure. that's reasonable and customary, and you'll get a percentage of that covered. Now, it means the doctor can recoup their money from you, which is one of the advantages to trying to stay in network whenever you can, because they're not going to collect more than they've reached. Okay, I think
I'm still on medical, and I'm just curious about the difference, because I'm in a contract college, and my perception is that there's a fairly significant difference in medical benefits between the two systems, and that as a contract college employee, I have fewer options with my...
Fewer options for providers or for...
Yeah, fewer options for providers.
Okay.
Is that...
I wouldn't say that's a common fact. It's not a consistent kind of thing. It depends on the type of service that you might need. So keep in mind, we are a pretty enclosed community. So the doctors that we have here are the doctors that we have here. They've negotiated to participate in particular insurance companies. So, for example, our Blue Cross, our Empire plan, or our any of our contract college plans, they've done similar to Aetna. They've contracted with doctors to be members.
Yeah.
So Aetna has a strong presence in this area, but so do a few other carriers. To be honest, on the endowed side, we don't have another strong insurance company to go to. Aetna's the only one in this area that will cover as much as it does, have as many doctors participating. So with the state, we get the state plans, which they try to get massive coverage, but it doesn't mean there's a lot of Blue Cross doctors here. There's not in-network doctors here.
No, nobody seems to want to work with the Empire plan.
We're not getting that, I mean, Debbie, we're not getting that across the board, right?
That
individuals can't find contract college doctors, right?
Yes, for Tompkins County, Ithaca area, yes.
Okay, we are hearing that.
Yep.
Just for Empire?
For Empire, yes.
Okay. I mean, unfortunately, we don't have any real push on Empire to change the practice. We can talk to New York State, but Empire is going to have their spread that they have. And we don't have an option not to use their benefits. So I'm just conscious of time. We can come back to that, though, when we get to the contract on the side. So we talked about health. Let's talk about dental for a moment. Dental is a voluntary plan. You could choose to be in it, choose not to be in it. Again, we have three different coverages. We have the A-plus plan, kind of the highest paying plan, the A plan, and the B plan. Different folks have different needs within those plans. Basically, when we look at those plans, and these are insured, going back to your point, so these are insured arrangements we have with the vendors. We had a new partner help us this year, Strategic Benefit Advisors. And when we went back to Emeritus and kind of said, this isn't acceptable, the kinds of fees that you're charging are not acceptable, we really, really pushed back this year. And we actually got them to look back at their own claims, and this very rarely happens, but as an insured product, they came back and said, we would be willing to reduce your premiums going forward, because they think the risk can be adjusted. So I'm in a difficult situation, because normally when someone says to me, I'm going to reduce your premiums this year, I'm really cautious. Because what does that mean next year? If I reduce your premiums this year and we have a iffy year, a bad year, what's going to happen the next year? Is it double what it would have been? So normally I would look at that very carefully. This year I feel differently, though, because in looking at the data, I really think going back a number of years, we warrant a decrease. And we warrant a decrease at about 12%. Now, before you get excited, dental premiums are somewhat lower, so 12% isn't a huge amount of money. But I want to go ahead and decrease premiums for this year. The reason that I'm comfortable that I'm not going to stand in front of you next year and say, okay, now we have a 37% increase, is because I want us to change how we think about dental. We're offering three dental plans. I'm old. I've been in this business for a long time. I've never been anywhere where we have three dental plans. I'm really not sure of the value that we're getting. A lot of companies have a high plan and a low plan, and they say, let me make my choice by what my needs are. When I look at the data for A plus A and B, we are absolutely divided across all three families. There's no age factors, there's no salary factors, nothing is making a play here, which makes me think, why are people choosing one or the other? And I talked to my onboarding folks, and it seems to be one of the, I like this class, so I'm going to pick this. It may not be true all the way across the board, but I really want to look at dental that we offer for 2020. And so by going ahead and decreasing the premium for 2019, when I go to the board and start talking to vendors for 2020, we're going to start at a lower level. But they're certainly not going to start with a So I want to make sure we offer you the best dental we can and at a reasonable price. So this year, you're going to reap the rewards. I want to give you money back in your premium. So what does that mean? If we take this 12% reduction and we go, let's go to the highest plan, the A-plus plan, again, about 1,200 staff in there, the reduction per month is going to be anywhere from $6 to $19. Now, for those of you who are remembering, a couple slides ago when we talked about the increase on the Aetna plans, the largest increase was $4 to $23, and that was our lowest enrolled plan with Weill Cornell. So even at the $3 to $8 a month, $4 to $13 a month, if you're in both Aetna and an Emeritus plan, net, you're probably going to come out to close to zero. No impact on the increase in one and the increase in the other. I can't stand before you a lot of years and say that, but this is a year when things kind of aligned. And again, my goal would be that I'd be standing here next year and talking about a new improved dental offering for 2020. Dental questions? Dental's a favorite topic. Okay, the last one, and here we are talking about true insurance, so insured financial relationships. Basic life insurance, and again, there's a slight difference for different levels of faculty and staff, but basically it's all the same. We offer a free basic life insurance policy. Basically, it's a formula times salary capped at $50,000 a year. Unfortunately, and this is a really sad part of my job, we have had a fair number of deaths over the past 3 years, and that's we kind of look at a three-year window on life insurance. So when Cigna, who is the insurer, looks at our risk, we're a risky population. I mentioned earlier we're aging. That doesn't help us either. We do have some good young millennials. Say young. We do some millennial risk and some change in risk, so that's helpful. But it's really worth about almost a 4% increase. It's actually worth a little bit more, but I got them to hold to 4. So what I'd like to do and what we're putting forth is that we're going to renew with Cigna for just 1 year instead of our usual 3, because we had a bad year in 2016 for deaths. It was even worse than 2017. And so slowly we start to roll off that experience. So if I stand in front of them talking about 2020 and 2021, I might have some better risk to point to, in which case I might not have to live with this kind of a renewal for a long period of time. So we are going to see Cornell pick up a little bit more, about $200,000 a year in expense for the same coverage that we've had before, but I'm hoping that we can get it to a better point going forward. Now, this is separate from the voluntary plan. She just has group universal life policies that are voluntary. Those are all age-based. That's insured too, so it's about you and your relationship to Cigna and your age and that sort of thing. Those we're not talking about. Those for active are going to see the same age-based rates. We're not seeing increases there. This is just the basic portion. Similarly, for long-term disability, back to Carol's area again, Cornell pays for long-term disability insurance for you, covers you if you're out for more than 6 months. Again, higher use of long-term disability here at Cornell than any other place I've seen. The good news to that is that we're also bringing people back more from long-term disabilities. So while we have more incidents, we're actually having luck in people being able to come back to work eventually. Not that we're forcing them to. They're able to come back to work in the rigid schedule. So we've had bad experience. They really wanted a double-digit increase. Again, I just couldn't live with that. So we are taking an 8% increase for 19. That same idea. I'm only doing a 1 year. We're going to go try to renegotiate for the next 2 years after that, hopefully have a good year in 18. But that's going to be another $230,000 to Cornell just for that increased portion. Questions on
Just getting back to that long-term disability and sort of the relationship that then that would have with return to work. So any workplace accommodations that we can provide that would allow people to return to work as opposed to that. Has that been...
And that's part of what we're doing to actually bring people back. Carol could probably speak more eloquently to it, but we have a large number of LTD cases that we're able to actually say, yes, we can make an accommodation, we can change hours, we can look at physical space to get you back at a certain period without losing those LTD benefits. We try to find a way that earnings and the LTD benefits can work hand in hand.
What about, and maybe this is a metrics issue, Carol, I know we talk about stuff all the time, but I think it would be, are we tracking that? Can we show the metrics about what the cost of the accommodation versus the reduction and the elimination of a long-term disability?
We can't. Sadly, we don't see a lot of elimination of long-term disability.
Okay.
Because, again, the nature of qualifying for it usually
means
that
significant.
There's something that's going to be lifetime,
mm-hmm.
some kind of basis. But, no, we can definitely talk about what we can produce, and I think that's a valuable factoid for us to be able to talk about.
Okay, great.
Last slide, next to last slide. I promise we get here. So Contra College, as you know, works on a different schedule for renewals. They're a schedule that works through New York State, and they are involved in what's called an option transfer period rather than open enrollment. We're getting ready to go into open enrollment for active endowed. It'll kick off on November 1st. It will run through the 19th. We still don't know when the option transfer period will be for New York State. Now, some of you, if you're Contra College, might have already gotten a booklet in the mail from New York State that says, option transfer period is here. It's actually not. as we often have to do, I sadly have to say that really, I don't think it's that pretty, but that nice booklet that they have, you've got to disregard it because it doesn't apply to us here. We have to work with the state on our own window of time and our own rates. So we hope that it will kick off as usual towards the end of November, beginning of December, probably around 2.5 weeks. Option transfer is a little bit different as defined by the state because we can only do certain things during option transfer. You can only reduce your coverage from family to individual. You can waive coverage completely. You can do things with legal insurance, which is a Cornell-provided benefit, or you can do things with flexible spending accounts. It's not as open as what open enrollment is, which lets you make changes, you know, kind of that window of time. There are those same changes that can happen as far as adding dependents, adding spouses, that sort of thing throughout the year with New York State, but they're very limited on when they go into effect and how you have to do them. So we can talk more about that if you'd like. But option transfer period gives us this window, again, of certain changes that can happen. I have not seen anything yet on rates. Yes.
Is there any talk on the contract side of going to more than the two plans, like individual plus child or individual plus spouse?
I've not heard the state say they're ready. So I will tell you, on our side, it'd be great because we've already designed that way and we can just carry it over. It's a pretty big undertaking to redo rates to a four-tier because basically, give you a little bit of financial end of it, you have to make a certain amount of money for a person each year to offset your liability. So you come up with an annual premium I have to collect for a person. When I add another person to that, my risk is higher. And if that person's an adult, it's actually higher than if I had multiple children. So when I look at risk, three kids are less risk than one adult. If I go to a family unit, it's all this risk. And so what you end up doing is if you try to go from two tiers, so let's say this is going to cost you $1 for individual and $2 for family, when you try to spread that out over four, the family probably goes up to $4 or $6 because you have to give a break to the other two that would have been a family before. So one of the challenges is the math, to be honest, and the risk that they take on. So the state, I haven't heard them saying, let's go
to that. Because like a family of two is playing the same right as a family of six.
Right. It's unfortunately, it's socialization the bad way.
Yeah.
What would happen, though, is the family of six could end up paying much more than a family of two if you went to the 4-tier. And that's much, much more. That's one of the challenges.
And contract is only eligible for GHI dental, correct?
Correct.
Yeah.
So we talked about some of the limitations and some of the variations on what's available. Keep in mind, things like life and LTD and voluntary benefits and tuition benefits, those are all things that Cornell has added to the state offerings. So while we have this contractual relationship with the state for health and dental, we can still add on to the other benefits, which is what we've done before. So there's still opportunities for those other benefits throughout the year. Hard to believe for me, but I'm sure you're going, phew, he's done. This is my last slide. My team and I are here to answer any other questions that we can. We certainly encourage you to call us and talk to a counselor if you have very individual issues rather than some of the ones not share in a group. We can talk to you individually.
So we received a question online that I hope we can help with.
Okay.
The question from an anonymous source is, why can we no longer go to Cornell Health? This was a great benefit for those of us working on campus. Those types of changes factor into our use of sick time. And so they wanted to know about that change.
So I'm going to answer this in an unofficial capacity because I am not Cornell Health. I'm not the legal end of the entity. So Cornell Health is certified as a student health plan provider. The services that they are authorized to provide are for students. We historically have added on a few things, like getting prescriptions filled there, like return to work, like other things for faculty and staff. Technically, under the true certification that they have, that's not allowed. And so what they've done, and they've been working with council about this for the last year, they've really looked at what they can safely offer and what they can't. So we've still got some minimal return to work certification that we can do with them, but they're not a walk-in clinic. They're really a student health plan. One of the reasons why I don't have student health as part of my empire is that student health is very, very different as far as the regulations, as far as what's required, the funding mechanisms, than faculty and staff health. Really two different things under very different regulations. So I'm not a student health expert. I could run one maybe if I had an expert working with me, but it does have limitations on what it can do.
I was just going to say, I actually had a conversation with Sharon Dittman about this question, and just very briefly, that Cornell Health is regulated under the New York State Department of Education as opposed to the Department of Health. So
mm-hmm.
It is very much as Gordon just described for students.
Yeah.
It can receive any member of the community who has an urgent need that would be assessed and then transferred. But it's driven by policy of the Department of Education.
Yes.
Very briefly. So in about an hour and a half, I'm going to get on the road and go to Syracuse to get a consultation on a procedure because I have no opportunity or access in the area. I know that, you know, kind of building on some of the other questions, I know that we say a lot of times the contract college is kind of beholden to the state or under the state, but are there no opportunities to have any type of a negotiation or conversation with the state? Because there does seem to be quite a disparity in terms of access and benefits between the contract college and the endowed side. And it seems to me a contract in its essence is a relationship. It's a benefit for the state as well that this university provides that educational service. So is there no opportunity to kind of bring in line the healthcare systems into a little bit more parity?
There's a slight opportunity. I will tell you, Crystal's been here 2 months now. I will be here 2 months, or 2 years in about 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still waiting my appointment in Albany to talk about
right.
this kind of thing.
No, I'm
just... I hate to say it that way, but we are kind of a small cog in the New York State health system wheel.
Mm-hmm.
Even of the universities who participate, we're one of only two who are not on the New York State payroll system. We're not doing anything through the state. We're this wonderful standalone, which means that sometimes we get forgotten mm-hmm. when things are being implemented in the state. Sometimes we're asked about changes that they're making. Sometimes we find out about them after you do. We didn't know the booklet was going to be in your hands yet. I try to get communication from them. It's a little bureaucratic, I will admit, me trying to have a contact who actually stays. Right. So I'm trying, and but we don't have a lot of help. Sorry to say.
One more question, and then we're going to need to move on.
Yes, Andrea.
Promotional activities, all of these things, just letting people know of the changes that you've talked about today. How are you handling
that? Actually, that's a really good thing. So I would ask, because this isn't public knowledge yet, this is information that we're sharing with you. Certainly the RFP about dental, that's my goal. I'm not necessarily putting that in the chronicle tomorrow, but that is the goal of addressing this. We will do a massive open enrollment communication in three ways. We're actually going to do a part of our open enrollment process. There will be an enrollment guide that we created last year that helps someone understand what they do in Doug's side and how they go into work day to make changes. We'll also have a cover letter with that will talk about the kinds of changes. Mm-hmm. For the most part, we tend not to talk about percentage increases for people. We tend to talk about dollar increases. So again, you know, these kinds of dollar ranges, that's what we'll talk about as far as the cost increases to you. And I know this is a secondary question that's always in the back of people's mind. I do run reports to see what does this mean to you in relation to SIP. So when we look at what's the average SIP and what's the dollar, again, I have to go to dollars. People get confused sometimes and say, well, my healthcare went up 3.9%, my SIP only went up 2%, so I'm losing 10%. They're actually very different formulas. But I'm very aware of the fact, particularly in our lower paid positions, that taking another $4 a month just gave them along with transportation expenses and those sorts of things. So we're very cognizant of what we're doing. My effort is to keep the message as positive as we can. I have to be truthful on what we're facing, though. We kind of all share the risk of health care. And so the other communication campaigns we want to start doing a little bit more throughout the year is talking about how do we get to prevention? How do we, and we're looking at a program to involve the whole community. How can we connect with Ithaca College, with all the service and medical providers in the area to talk about opioids, to talk about our high cost mental health. Mental health expenses in these communities are really high. And so how do we deal with that and the persistent expenses? So part of it we can do, part of it we have to do bigger, but it is about talking about it. And maybe we can get better at that.
Gordon, thank you very much for being here with your team, and I would encourage, I'm sure there are other questions. Please direct those to Tarek and his committee, and so that we can funnel those back over to you. We really appreciate your time.
Yes.
Thank you
so much.
So at this point, back to the agenda, we're going to request for approval of last meeting's minutes, and I want to thank Hey for chairing that last meeting. So, yes.
Here's a correction before we approve it.
Okay.
On the last page under committee reports, I was actually reporting not under the election committee, but the retirement plan oversight committee.
On this, just on the last page.
5G on the last page. It's minor, but.
Yep. Nope. Any other amendments to the minutes from last meeting? Okay, the minutes are approved. At this point, I'd like to thank everyone for their participation in the President's address last week. It was very evident that, you know, our team was out there in sponsorship of that event. And so for those that pitched in, for those that played a role, and for those that just supported from behind the scenes, thank you to all of you for doing that. I will tell you that going forward, I'm sure there are some feedback points that we can learn from in terms of making it an even better event going forward. So we will put together a bulletized list of thoughts and feedback points that we can take on as an assembly to improve, and then we'll get that out to everybody for your feedback and input. I also would like to tell you a little bit about the staff conversations. So Mary, Reginald, and I had our first one this past Monday. at the vet school. It was attended by about 40 folks, and ranging from lab technicians who are in 24-hour emergency settings to administrators, communicators, HR personnel, and I felt like the ball is rolling in the right direction. There was really good feedback from the staff community. I think Chris and some of the communications committee took notes. We have over 3 pages of notes just from that first event. So the long-term goal, after we have visited the 10 different sites across campus and Geneva, is to collate that information, identify themes that were prevalent throughout the discussions, and find some action areas where we can start making some changes to benefit all of us in the staff community at Cornell. Are there any questions about the rollout of that or your role in it? Because I certainly, we had, I think, 7 folks from the EA there. It was really nice to see the support around this initiative. Okay, so at this point, I'd like to ask if there's any new business for today. Okay, and we will go into committee reports. I know some of the committees have just had either just met or are planning to be meeting in this week or next. So go ahead first to Communications and Awards Committee. Carrie, are you online?
Yeah, I'm here. Hello. Okay. Hi, everybody. You guys hear me okay?
Mm-hmm.
Yes? Okay.
Yeah.
So I just want to reiterate Craig's thank you. Thanks to everybody who signed up to volunteer and just showed up with smiling faces. And it was a great turnout for us, for our membership. So I really appreciated everybody's help on that event. As an FYI, we did, as many of you know, we experienced some quite unfortunate technical difficulties with the live broadcast. Luckily, we have the complete recording. It's posted on Cornellcast with captions and transcripts and everything. So if anyone's looking for that, wants to see what they may have missed, it's there. It's at the same URL as the live broadcast. So that's just an FYI. As Craig mentioned, Chris was awesome and showed up yesterday. He took notes at the staff conversation event. If you guys have a chance, please do click on the link I sent. When did I send that? Monday? Or I can't remember what day it is even. There's a sign-up genius link that I sent around. If you haven't yet, please take a minute and see if any of the future dates for that series work with your schedule. We're looking for at least one communications person to attend each of those sessions, and any number of EA members can attend as well. So, and the communications person will be on the hook for taking notes. So we do have some gaps still to fill. If you could sign up, that'd be great. What else? We're working on a survey to go out to all staff about communications preferences and priorities, and so that's in the works. Arla, are you there, Arla? Oh, there you are.
Yes, I'm here.
Hey, Arla.
Hi.
I'm gonna reach out offline. I really want to loop you in on the project that Adam and I have been working on to promote the benefit programs, and it's something that started back when
Marjorie
was chair. So I really love to get you looped in on that. Maybe the three of us could meet and do that. That's in the works, rather, you know, slow moving, but still in the works. I think that is my update. That's all.
Thank you, Carrie.
Okay.
Education Committee?
That's me. So we met on October 9th, right after the presidential address. We talked about the Education Committee's initiative last year, which refers back to Carrie's project she just mentioned. Talked about other concerns and initiatives, and right now I'm just doing some background research on the employee degree program. We're just kind of digging up data to meet again and try to figure out what our initiatives will be for this year.
Awesome. Thank you. Welfare Committee.
I had a tough time getting back, hearing back from everybody that had been on the committee, confirming that they want to continue, and those are at-large members. I have been working with Adam and trying to figure out the best place to do that because I don't think people want to come to the Humphrey Service Building for me, lovely as we are. And I wanted to, we've balanced doing our first meeting via Zoom versus an in-person meeting, and I think it's better to build a little bit of a team if we can get everybody face-to-face where it's possible. There have been a number of people who can't continue, so we've been building that with, I've been in contact with a number of people that have contacted me about interest in the committee and what we're doing. So I hope that we should be able to meet next week. I've laid it a couple of times and trying to find some spots.
Okay.
If anybody has any spots that they're available, I know that probably your building, Christy, would not be the best place right now for them to be able to do it, but other places that they can think of that
we
they
met,
would be
I booked Man 100,
yeah,
which was central.
Yes,
that you can actually you do Zoom right there real easily.
Oh, that's a good
idea. So if you go on the library website, you can do 100 or the room next door, it might be
102.
So those are pretty easy. Well, if you just go to the library counter to get the key.
Great suggestion. Thank you.
Thank you. And just one thing for Natalia also. Varun and I had discussed mental health issues a few weeks back. And if that is something that your committee can take a look at in terms of how staff might be able to support the student community on mental health issues, I would appreciate that.
That'd be great. Yeah.
Thank you.
Craig?
Yes.
Excuse me. On that note, this week is Mental Health Awareness Week, right, for students?
Mm-hmm.
I think there's an event happening today.
There's an event happening today right in this building. Actually, Lift Your Spirits Day, so that's happening in the atrium.
Thank you, Natalia. Mm-hmm. Transportation Committee.
So I have been contact with Bridget. The transportation survey has gone out. I encourage everyone to please fill it out and get people in your community to fill it out. We will be meeting hopefully twice before Thanksgiving. She will be presenting the results, hopefully from the survey, at the second meeting, which will be middle to end of November. So just get together.
Okay, thank you very much. Benefits and Policy Committee.
Yes, so we meet here tomorrow at 2 o'clock, so I would encourage people, if they can, to be here in person for our first meeting, and I'm happy to announce we have about 14 members.
Awesome. Nice.
So it's going to be a big it's going to be a big crew, but, you know, hopefully we can do some good work there. So.
Great. Executive Committee, anything you'd like to share?
No, I don't think so.
I'll only say that at our next meeting with Mary Opperman, we're going to talk about some of the feedback and lessons learned from the president's address and then any refinements around the staff discussion. So we'll try and get that list out and get your feedback on any comments, suggestions prior to the next time we meet. Elections Committee, I believe we have nothing to pass. Are there any other points? We have about 10 to 15 minutes remaining. Doesn't mean we have to take the whole time. So, but I'd like to open the floor if there are any comments or concerns that you'd like to address. Yes.
I just had a question about, and apologies if I wasn't paying attention, I was getting food. The staff meeting, the conversation.
Staff conference, yeah.
Somebody took notes.
Yes.
Where are those available? So, that we can...
so the notes aren't going to be made publicly available until we've had all 10 sessions, and then we're going to funnel those through HR. Now, I don't think there's any, I mean, there's nothing classified in them. If you want to have, they're on Box, right?
Yeah, they're in the Communications Committee's Box folder under meetings.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just curious to see because I won't be able to attend many of them,
okay,
what the conversations are.
Yeah, from the vet school specifically, I think the trends were around the physical location, and you know we were talking about connectedness with Cornell, and just you know what creative ways can we bring things to the vet school physically, whether it be concerts, talks, some of the central campus activities. Other factors were unique to the vet school around the 24/7. Animal support requirements that their emergency techs have and so forth, and some of the flexibility that they may not have that we in Central Campus that aren't on that 24-hour schedule do have a little more flexibility. So those were a couple points. We talked about identifying areas within your respective workplaces where you can create senses of community and connectedness. And one example I gave was within the PSB Clark Rockefeller complex. We have some of our staffs, even though we're not in the same colleges, but we're doing similar things like finance, HR, course curriculum scheduling. So we're trying to find ways to network our staffs internally here. So that was kind of it. Anybody want to add anything?
No, we did have some non-vet school individuals actually come in. We did. They actually also were active in participating and had questions. So it was not necessarily just vet school oriented. They echoed the same as far as being possibly a bit disconnected outside of their own silo. This isn't just the vet school. We will probably see it throughout some of the other presentations. And again, that creativity, that engagement of how we can reach out, how we can possibly connect. There was
calendar creating an area where somebody could select all the events that they want to add to their calendar, ideas like, you know, networking opportunities, platforms like LinkedIn to create more of an online digital community. I think it was good to get that engagement with Mary Hopperman for individuals who normally do not have access, you know, or opportunity to meet with Mary Hopperman and Reginald. So I think it was a good forum for people to have that conversation and express those ideas. And it seemed like Mary Hopperman was very receptive to some of the ideas, and they were going to take it back and see what they could do from these discussions. So it seemed productive, I think.
And one of the good things is there were some questions to break the ice and get people going. And it was quite interesting with the one that I found who was a good, and hopefully it stays within all of them, is what do you feel mostly connected to, whether it is individual colleague, your college, your unit, or the university. And it was realistically, more often than not, it was your immediate colleague that you really felt connected to. So I think for Mary Offerman's point of view, or the Central University's point of view, is how do we get it that you feel connected to the institution? But as you all of us know, the majority of the time, if you're working day to day with that group, that's where they're you're connecting your funding. So I hope that question stays to be able to sort of get the vein of the thought process throughout all of them and have that consistency. So
thank you. One thing I failed to do was ask if Chris could give us a quick update. We had a meeting last night. It was a very good and informative meeting. So, Chris?
Let's see. The CJC is like a very dominant topic in revising the campus code of conduct. President Pollack actually came to the meeting and was hoping that, you know, a big initiative is to take the campus code of conduct, and there was a report also that was finalized that's going to the CJC about how to improve the code. Basically, it's like try to make it more readable, less legalese, and also educational. So there's a lot of stuff where it kind of says, doesn't give examples of things that happen, and there's very vague language. So they're hoping that they can revise it so that like a normal human being can read it, and then also while they're reading it, learn from it as well. So make it educational. Make it consumable so that, because there's a lot of things that are overlapping. There's policy 6.4, which they talk a lot about how you've got all this information and it's so much information that no one really knows what it means anymore. And then when you start looking at one specific area and make a point based on a policy, someone else comes and says, well, here's this other thing that exists. So that seems to be like a very high priority.
North Campus expansion is another still very big topic. There's a lot of sustainability and climate scientists that are active here in the Cornell community and retirees that have looked at the project and have different discussions and ideas about how to make sure that we meet our carbon neutral goal, because some of the ideas that they have taken where they are going to introduce some technology in the short term until Earth-based source heating can be online. So there's a disagreement of strategies of like where do you buy energy from the grid to have the overall lowest carbon emissions, or do you install heat pumps? And something that came out of that happening was that Michael Kotlikoff has agreed to have an outside expert actually weigh and take a look at that issue of like, is it better for, because like Earth-based source heating is sort of like an experiment that's 15 years out from now, like whether that's really going to work or happen. And so it's sort of like, I'm not a climate scientist, I'm an IT person, but do we, invest in something that is a short-term technology that might have a higher current carbon footprint than something that's more expensive to get us to that time where we can like online and then really realize our goal? And that's probably the most of it. They're also still filling out their committees and their seats and things that are going on. So it is developing. But it was a good meeting.
And I would encourage you to take an opportunity to look at the final report of the working group on hate speech and harassment that was just put online. I think it was the beginning of this week. And it is going to the CJC next for further either implementation and so forth. So with that, any other comments, questions? Thank you all very much. Have a wonderful week and stay dry.
This has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.